Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com.
Just as a really quick review, we've covered a lot of ground as we've gone through it. It seems sometimes when you divide it up, it's slow moving, but I think, slowing down and looking at these Psalms is helpful. But remember, all the way back to chapter 16, David is anointed as king. Chapter 17, David then becomes and defeats Goliath. Chapter 18, this is when it all just starts to, the plot starts to thicken. Saul, the king on the throne, becomes envious of David. And everybody just loves David. Everyone sings of David's praise. And Saul from that moment eyed David from that day on. And Saul then tries to kill David. Psalm 57, when he goes and sends watchmen to watch his house. Chapter 20, then Jonathan comes back and finally discovers who his father is. That Thanksgiving feast with the spear thrown at the end. Chapter 21, David escapes, goes to Nob, sees Ahimelech and Gath, the king of Achish. And then we saw Psalm 34 and then Psalm 56. Chapter 22, the horrendous nature of Saul's leadership, the murder of Ahimelech and his whole family. And then the Psalm 57, Psalm 52, and then Psalm 23, saving Keilah and fleeing Saul. And then now we come to Psalm 54. Out of all the 14 Psalms that we have that have historical annotations, historical titles, most of them, Psalm 7 gives the heading, but not sure exactly when it was. And we've pointed that sometimes it's not as clear. Same with Psalm 30. But out of these kind of 14, 12, depends on how you label them in their historical setting, 50 of them happen in this period of David's life. From chapter 19 to chapter 24, we have these Psalms written. And as we've gone through them, we've tried to point them out. And remember last time, this great escape that David was running from Saul, this epic movie, you might say, until right at that last minute, that 11th hour, 11 o'clock at 11:59, Saul gets the call to return that the Philistines have come in. And right, this hunt begins, and during this running, he writes these many psalms that we might not even know if we don't look at the title, don't understand the history of David's life. Psalm 34, we love that phrase, taste and see that the Lord is good, but during this time is when it is written. So tonight we see another psalm written in this period of time as a prayer. And this prayer is prayed during this time of distress, this time of trouble. And again, written through this specific time about a specific situation. But this prayer is good and helpful for us as well. We want to have a look at the historical situation as we have been going through, but also look at how this psalm applies to us. So here now, Psalm 54. To the choir master, with stringed instruments, a maskil of David, when the Ziphites went and told Saul, is David hiding among us? O God, save me by your name, and vindicate me by your might. O God, hear my prayer. Give ear to the words of my mouth, for strangers have risen against me. Ruthless men seek my life. They do not set God before themselves. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is the upholder of my life. He will return the evil to my enemies. In your faithfulness, put an end to them. With a freewill offering, I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks to you, your name, O Lord, for it is good. For he has delivered me from every trouble, and my eye has looked in triumph on my enemies. You're in trouble. Words that ring in a child's ear that want to flee from this. As we get older, we might still hear these words. Actually, when I go home tonight, I might hear these words. At about 6:15 tonight, I heard the horn honk, and on the road right out the front of our house was a dog. stray dog running down the road. And so I rescued the dog, chained it up in our backyard, and gave it some water and went inside and told Sarah, we have a dog in our backyard. And she thought I was joking. She thought I was kidding. And she, I might be in trouble when I get home. I left my wife in the terrible time, the hardest hour of her day, with crying kids and hungry kids and kids that need to get ready and bathed and ready for bed, with an extra task to look after this dog. And so you're in trouble. These words that might resonate with us. Trouble comes sometimes because of our own foolish actions, as I just pointed out, my own actions. Sometimes trouble comes, although not because of our actions, because of other people's actions. It doesn't matter who you are, you can't necessarily avoid trouble. You can become wise to put things in place so trouble is not at every time and point, but you can't avoid trouble. Money doesn't prevent trouble. Having more money sometimes causes trouble. Actually, Christians, we're actually guaranteed in our life that troubles will come up. Troubles will be around the corner until we go to heaven. And as we've looked at previously, the trouble in David's life, this trouble has many names. The men at the house of, at his house, like dogs outside, Doeg, the men at Gath, Saul and his men chasing him down. Yet as trouble pins him in, this psalm that is prayed in the wilderness of my own is a prayer of a time in trouble. And we see three things that a believer can pray in times of trouble. The first thing is they can cry out in trouble, verses 1 and 3. A person can cry out in a situation. You cry out because someone might hear you at that time, or you cry out because someone might hear you and do something as well. Ultimately, you cry out because you are unable to do anything yourself. And in these three verses, we see three things that we can cry out. The first is that we can cry out for salvation, which is in verse 1. O God, save me by your name and vindicate me by your might. The prayer is directed towards God. And we note that he prays to God to save him. And he doesn't turn to God and blame God. He turns to God to save him, not blame God. And this cry is twofold. It's save me by your name and vindicate me by your might. Firstly, save me by your name. He cries out to God to save him, to deliver him. And we realize we might be able to get ourselves out of trouble sometimes. But it's only God who truly saves us, who truly delivers us. But also, he invokes the name of the Lord. By your name, he says. He not only cries out that God would save him, but he points back and doesn't point to his own works. He doesn't point to what he has done. He points back to God and his character, to his name and reputation. That God, you are my deliverer. Not only would you deliver me, but you are my deliverer. A business ultimately is known by their name. This is what critical in brand marketing is, to be able to uphold the name and the reputation of their product. And if a business's name gets dragged through the mud, then that affects their product, their outlay, their business and their company, to be able to protect your reputation during that time. And he cries out that God would deliver him, not because of himself, not because of David's actions, but God's reputation. This is one thing that a Christian carry, that they're marked by God as his people. We'll see this later in the psalm, that his name comes up again. And secondly, he asks for God to save him. And salvation includes vindication. And the word vindicate is legal terminology. It means of someone who actually passes judgment on another, clearing their name. Not merely just deliver me, but vindicate me. As a witness comes to the stand and presents the case, that this person is innocent. He stands there and he clears then the accused. And here David prays that God, the just judge, would vindicate him, would clear his name. Deuteronomy 32:36 says, "For the Lord will vindicate his people and have compassion on his servants when he sees that their power is gone and there is none remaining, bond or free." And then again in Psalm 135, "For the Lord will vindicate his people and have compassion on his servants." In Isaiah 3, "The Lord has taken place to contend and he stands to judge peoples." Even back to Hannah's prayer at the start of 1 Samuel, "The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Against them he will thunder in heaven. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth, and he will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed." Here, the same word here in that passage that says judge, "The Lord will judge to the ends of the earth," is the same Hebrew word which is found here. "The Lord would vindicate me." And David cries out that the Lord would save him and vindicate him. "Give strength to his king," as Hannah's prayer prays. And we cry out for salvation because of his name and because of his might. And David brings up their sin. And you would think he would maybe bring up his innocence at this point and say, "Look, they have sinned against me, but also I have not done any wrong." He doesn't mention anything like that when it comes to his own innocence. But he comes back to God and God's name, God's character as the deliverer, as the Savior, the one who vindicates. And we cry out to in salvation. We bring nothing. We don't bring out our good deeds that the Lord might vindicate us. "Nothing to them in my hands I bring, only to the cross I cling." In trouble, whether we have made the bed that we need to sleep in or are placed in that bed by other people and the trouble that surrounds us, we call out for salvation only through his name. And the second thing that a believer can cry out in times of trouble is crying out for someone to hear in verse 2. "O God, hear my prayer. Give ear to the words of my mouth." The reason you cry out is because you are helpless, but you are also helpless, but also hopeful that someone might hear you. It would not be good if I fell down my stairs in my basement and tried to cry out as loud as I could, but no one was there to hear. No one was there to actually help me. But I would cry out if I knew someone could hear me. And here, David's prayer is that God would hear him. It's strange, like asking a question, can you hear me? It's a yes or no question. But there is only really one answer. If they say, "Yes, I can hear you," then they hear you. But can you hear me? They're not going to say, "No, I can't," because they then would have heard the question. But you hear because you realize someone is going to hear me, hear you. And before we cry out, we are heard by God. He listens. Isaiah 65:24 says, "Before they call, I will answer. While thou yet are speaking, I will hear." And even during the times of troubles, just a few chapters ago in 1 Samuel 21, David wrote in Psalm 34, "When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted, and he saves the crushed in spirit." Salvation realizes that our need is to be saved, but also crying out for that salvation. And we cry out knowing that God hears us. And the third thing that a believer can cry out is crying about crying out about the situation in verse 3. For strangers have risen against me, and ruthless men seek my life. They do not set God before themselves. Why are you crying out to be saved from this trouble? The trouble that you face? And David lists here in this situation reasons why he's crying out to God. And he gives three things that have caused this trouble in his life that he wishes to be rescued from. The first is strangers risen against me. The second is ruthless men seek my life. And the third thing is they place themselves before God. He has spent a long time running from Saul. And now he hears that strangers are after him. The Ziphites who have heard and made allegiance to Saul and his kingdom. And almost Psalm 86 gives a list, and it's almost identical to this. And you wonder whether David wrote Psalm 86. Psalm 86, verse 14. O Lord, insolent men have risen up against me. A band of ruthless men seeks my life, and they do not set you before them. David speaks of this situation to God. He cries out for God for help. He knows that God would hear him, but he also gives specifics of this situation, this trouble which is coming to him. He's able to see their fault in rising up against him, seeking his life, but also that they do not put God before themselves. They think themselves higher than God. You remember the period of Judges at the end, right before we get to 1 Samuel, the end of Judges. There was no king of Israel, and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Here the Ziphites represent that great. There is a king in Israel, but they're still doing their things, what they do in their own right eyes. He's worried about their sin, they're seeking his life, but also they don't follow the first commandment. They're not worshiping God as the true God. As Exodus, the first commandment says that you shall have no other gods before me. But here they've put themselves before God. They worship themselves and not God. And David is able to see this and not only bring up this relationship between these strangers, but also their strangers' relationship between God. But he is not only in trouble, he not only sees his trouble that surrounds him, but he also sees the sin, and their sin against God. And the second thing he prays in this psalm is that he's proclaiming God's truth in trouble, verses 4 and 5. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is the upholder of my life. He will return the evil to my enemies, and your faithfulness put an end to them. The Ziphites, these strangers to David. But contrast this, these strangers who have risen up against him, but God he calls his helper. And the Ziphites are seeking David's life, but yet contrast this to God who is the upholder of life. And here David prays three truths about God in this one request. The first is that God is our helper. The Lord is my helper. Will I fear not fear? What can man do to me, as we've read before? God is our refuge and strength, our very present help in trouble. God is only on my side as my helper, Psalm 118 says, and I shall look in triumph to those who hate me. That in this time he realizes these Ziphites are strangers, these troubles that ensue, but he still sets his eyes and focus and gaze upon God and who God is to him. My helper, the upholder of my life. He will return to my enemies. In your faithfulness, put an end to them. The second truth he says is that God is our upholder of life. Now you think of a life support machine running in the background with someone who is right at the end of their life, this life support machine does it all. It pumps blood through their body. It puts breath in their lungs. And all these cords coming out of someone. But here, David is saying that God is our life support. In times of trouble, we realize two things in life. And life is completely out of our control. There's things that you can't guarantee in life, but birth and death. Birth has become a surgical procedure in most cases. Planned C-sections. They can be erased from the calendar. All this planning can be erased in a moment because the baby decides to come quickly. And death, too. Unknown, scheduled. No one has that date in their calendar. But death is known by God because God is the upholder of our life. And David realizes this, as you remember last week, last time when we looked at this, that right at the edge, you know, two sides of a mountain, Saul on one side and David on another, Saul wanting to take David's life and David wanting to run. It seemed like there was nothing that David could do, and there wasn't. It was the Lord's hand, the upholder of his life, that brought him through. And the third thing that David prays in this is God is faithful. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, Paul goes through and says, the saying is trustworthy, for if we have died with him, we also will live with him. If we endure with him, we will also reign with him. If we deny him, he will also deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful. And the reason Paul explains that he remains faithful is he cannot deny himself. We'll see this at the end, but just think about the faithfulness of God. One argument when it comes to character is to point out, not only to point out times when you have been something trustworthy, you know, to point to all the times that you were there, the times that you never let anyone down. But another way to prove your character and ability is not to ask the positive question, think about all the times that I have been faithful, is to ask the negative questions. Have I ever lied to you? Have I ever let you down? The question before us, has God ever been faithless? And the answer is no. We have many accounts of man letting God down, man not being faithful, but never God letting his people down. He remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. And here David prays, and he prays again, not bringing up his own works, his own ability, but God is my helper. The Lord is up the upholder of my life. You will return evil to my enemies. In your faithfulness, put an end to them. It's an imprecatory psalm. His one clear request in this psalm is found in verse 5. That he will return the evil to my enemies. It's common in imprecatory prayer that is prayed throughout the Bible. It's this simple principle reverses. Love your neighbor as yourself. Be treated how you will treat others. It's basically reversed. A taste of your own medicine. Coyote and Roadrunner. And you know the story, every single, you know, skit that they're in. Coyote plans how to capture Roadrunner. Sets a big plan, lots of sticks of dynamite, but eventually it backfires on himself. He is the one who gets trapped in his the trap that he sets. He's the one that explodes with all the dynamite. And you never feel sorry for him. No one sits there rooting for a coyote. That's what's going to happen to the people. His prayer is that God would return their own evil towards them. And that's difficult for us to think and consider. But the key to imprecatory psalms is that you are not taking things into your own hands. You're not taking them and dealing with people how you think they should be dealt with. You give it back to God and you pray that God would deal to this in this situation justly, fairly, righteously. You never come and say, God, do this for me. No, this is how you should pay them back. This is how the revenge is. But you lay it back in His hands. And you pray that He would repay, because vengeance is His. We'll see this next time as we look at Psalm 1 Samuel 24. David doesn't take things into his own hands. When others give him this counsel to be able to take Saul's life, and even repents in this situation, because he tries to take things into his own life, in his own hands. And the third thing that David does, and what believers can do, is look past the trouble, verses 6 and 7. With a free will offering, I will sacrifice to you. I will give thanks to your name, O Lord, for it is good. For he has delivered me from every trouble, and my eye has looked in triumph on my enemies. As we've looked at the Psalms during this time, we see how it helps us today to focus on God and who God is, but also looks forward to tomorrow. That there is hope for tomorrow as well. There's two things that David says he will do. He will sacrifice and he will give thanks. Sacrifices are not common. Last we heard of sacrifices in 1 Samuel was chapter 16, when Samuel was commanded to go to David to anoint him. He was worried about Saul coming in and finding out what he was doing. But the Lord told him that tell him to go, that you're just going to make a sacrifice. Now, Ahimelech was concerned about the holiness of David's men with the bread of presence. So it's hard to believe that they weren't making sacrifices of some sort. Yet it's pretty silent. And even in David's reign, it's not this frequent occurrence that comes up. And again, I don't think it needs to be overemphasized. I don't want to read too much into this. Just because it isn't said or isn't written down doesn't mean it's not happening. But here David is saying that he's turning to worship God, to give thanks to God. And he gives thanks to God, his name, his reputation, and we've seen this before. He gives thanks to God and His name in Psalm 52. I will thank you forever because you have done it. I will wait for your name, for it is good. In the presence of the godly, for he has delivered me from every trouble. That's verse 7. And even in troubled times, God remains faithful and he still remains good. The great thing about God being unchangeable is he never changes. He is good. Even if you're in a difficult, terrible situation that seems like you are in a lot of trouble, he still is good. He is still faithful. True faith, Martin Luther says, is a loving confidence in the goodness of God. He says it's a loving confidence in the goodness of God. When we go through troubles, it's oftentimes that we doubt God's goodness. We see the evil in the world and we doubt God is with us. We doubt God will see us through. But here, David is reminded that God is good. Not will be good, but He is good. And David has this loving confidence in the goodness of God that will see him through it. Spurgeon says, "Remember the goodness of God, for it is the frost of adversary. Sometimes we enjoy winter, but most of the time we start talking about spring. And good things are meant to be enjoyed, flavored and savored. And God's goodness is still present in our troubles and our woes. And lastly, He's delivered from every trouble. In verse 7, "For He has delivered me from every trouble, and my eye has looked in triumph on my enemies." Psalm 59, when Saul sent men to watch David's house, right at the very beginning when we started looking at this, in verse 10, David writes, "My God, in His steadfast love, will meet me. God will let me look in triumph on my enemies." Now, David's been fleeing for some time now, and it doesn't seem that his escaping is getting any further away. It seems Saul's anger is rising, his envy is growing like a weed in the garden. And right back at the start, he said that God will let me look on the triumph of my enemies. We noted when we looked at this in Psalm 59 that it was looking forward to the promise that really doesn't come to fruition until 2 Samuel. Or maybe even the psalm written in 2 Samuel, right at 2 Samuel chapter 22. But here David is saying that God has delivered me from my troubles, and He will do so again. God has never let me down up to this point. Why would He start now? Now this is opposite to what the Israelites did in the wilderness. He says, "God brought me out here to die," the Israelites did. But David says that God has brought me out here to live, that I would see triumph over my enemies. And the list of reasons for David to doubt, that David to throw in the towel, seemingly grows every time, every chapter you read. "I've had enough. I don't want to do this anymore." Yet it doesn't seem to crush his desire to follow God. Where else would he go? To whom would he turn? Because God is his helper, the upholder of his life. We don't know what troubles are around the corner. We don't know the troubles that we're walking through right now. Troubles that were brought upon ourselves, or the troubles that others are that are around us. And even if we did know some of the troubles that we're all walking through, we might not know all the troubles that others are going through. However, we are given this prayer in Psalm 54 as another testimony of God's faithfulness and His steadfast love to His people. We're also given this prayer that we might pray as well. Psalm that we would sing words to meditate on when we face troubles in our life. And God answered his prayer, David's prayer. And we pray. We cry out for salvation. We cry out to proclaim God's truth. We cry out looking past the trouble itself, knowing that God remains the same. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever.
Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com. Seven Springs Presbyterian Church began in 1874 and is a congregation of the Presbyterian Church in America located in Glade Spring, Virginia. Please join us for worship on Sunday at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. for His glory and His gospel.